Now, ESPN announced Monday that SportsCenter anchor Jemele Hill had been suspended for 2 weeks, saying she violated the organization's social media policy for a second time. She recently made comments on Twitter about how NFL fans could boycott vendors and advertisers associated with the Dallas Cowboys. She was reacting to the Cowboys owner instituting a new rule on player protests.
President Trump weighed in after this announcement, tweeting, "With Jemele Hill at the mic, it's no wonder ESPN ratings have tanked. In fact, tanked so badly, it is a talk of the industry."
Hill had previously made headlines in September when she tweeted that President Trump was a white supremacist.
Paul Hagan is a professor of law and co-director of the Center for Sports Law and Policy at Duke University, and he joins us to dig into the factors surrounding Hill's suspension, her rights, and how they intersect with workplace policies. Paul, thanks a lot for being here.
Glad to join you.
Well, Paul, why did ESPN decide this time around to suspend Jemele Hill?
Well, that you should ask them, but why did they have a right to do that? Is that the question?
Right. Why this time and not the first time?
Well, I think it was a second time, and therefore she had notice. There was greater clarity about what the company's position was. And I think also more directly, this time she called for a boycott of the sponsors of ESPN. So it was a direct, a political action statement that directly affected the financial underpinning of ESPN.
Now, Hill had in the past been critical of the president. She called him a white supremacist in a tweet, and now she, with these latest tweets, is wading into the politics of protesting at football games. Is it unusual for a media personality, a sports analyst, to take a stance like she has?
I think that the level of political social activism among all people surrounding sports has gone up significantly in the last probably 2 years. So it is in historical terms unusual, but it is part of what we've been seeing for the last couple of years. And probably matches the president's own use of social media to attack his opponents.
Now, on the one hand, Hill is an individual. She's a citizen with her own point of view. On the other hand, she represents ESPN. Where does that line get drawn when we're talking about a media personality with her own opinions and thoughts and feelings about things? Where does that line get drawn when it comes to her job and what her company is free or has a right to ask of her?
Well, I think there are two separate things that we want to be clear about. One of them is whether it's a good idea for ESPN to do that. ESPN has a vested interest in creating controversies, in having segments of the population who are responding to different views, hearing their ideas voiced. So whether it is wise to do it, I think is one question. The separate question is whether an employer, as part of its employee policies, can restrict certain kinds of speech of its employees. They're at their absolute strongest when it's speech in the workplace, speech using the facilities of the employer. It gets weaker the farther you get away from the workplace setting, but still, especially since what she was tweeting about is very directly related to her role and business position, I think they have a fairly strong legal claim to be able to do it.
What if she was tweeting off the clock, tweeting at 10 o'clock at night when she was home and on her personal phone?
As to, well, again, now we're a little bit, the question is the public likely to treat this as totally separate? Can we have restrictions on things that would lead to confusion? So, for example, the federal government limits what federal employees can say, the kinds of issues that they can get involved in, because of an possible confusion about whether they're speaking as a judicial law clerk, for example, or as a private individual. And I think that that's the central kind of concern here.
And in a post for the site, The Undefeated, at the end of September, and this was before the recent suspension, Hill wrote, "Yes, my job is to deliver sports commentary and news, but when do my duties to the job end and my rights as a person begin?" We've been getting at this a little bit, but looking expressly at the First Amendment, what are her rights?
Well, the First Amendment rights are actually relatively restricted. So originally, the First Amendment was Congress shall pass no law. After the Civil War, that was extended to the states. But it doesn't deal with private employers' ability to restrict speech, at least speech within the context of employment or related to employment. And part of what I think is behind that distinction is when the government acts to restrict speech, it really dramatically restricts it. If a private entity restricts speech, there are other competitors you can go to. Now, with that said, I think culturally we are, as a society, coming to believe that the rights of free speech extend very much more broadly than the actual legal or constitutional reach of the First Amendment. When that starts to happen, I'm not sure the legal position changes, but the way in which the action by the employer is perceived, their ability to attract employees to work under those kind of conditions, all change. So I would expect that ESPN will feel some negative response to this restriction of an African-American woman speaking on topics that she thinks directly relate to the welfare of African-Americans.
We're talking with Paul Hagen right now, co-director of the Center for Sports Law and Policy at Duke University, talking about the suspension of ESPN's Jemele Hill for a second violation of ESPN's social media guidelines. And extrapolating out a little bit, Paul, about what Americans assume the First Amendment, what their First Amendment rights are in the workplace, is there a correction needed as far as a cultural or a literacy, I guess would be a better term, a basic literacy of what the First Amendment rights entail when someone is on the job?
Well, I guess there are two approaches that we could be taking to this. One is, given that people may misunderstand how broadly their rights are protected, it would be useful to be clearer about that, to have better educational programs, that sort of thing. The other is that we may be in a cultural shift in which employers are going to discover that whatever their legal rights are, they'll do a great deal of damage to themselves if they start interfering with employee speech.
And back to Jemele Hill, she has been tangling directly with the White House, which has been an unusual thing to see with her tweets. And White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders responded, this is to the first incidents a couple weeks ago. Here she is.
But I think that's one of the more outrageous comments that anyone could make, and certainly something that I think is a fireable offense by ESPN.
And Hill saying that President Trump is a white supremacist. What do you think about that coming together of a person who is representing the company ESPN and the White House responding directly? What does that make you think of?
Well, we have a number of issues there. So is this a fireable offense to make a comment that is either an insight or an observation, whatever you want to characterize it? Is that a fireable offense? I suspect that the answer is yes, but that may depend on her contract and what she can be fired for. I suspect that she may be an at-will employee, in which case, comes as a great surprise to most Americans. They can be fired for any reason or no reason. So, is that a correct statement? Yes. Is it likely that an employer would want to do that? Well, that's another question. Would the public respond badly? So the president is now taking the position that the failure to discipline is causing the public to respond badly. I don't know that I'm in a position to analyze that very effectively, but that, I believe, is part of the question. What exactly is the limit on the employer? Ultimately, the limit is going to be how the public responds, how the public understand what their rights should be. To be a little clear, that was the flip side of whether the public should be informed they don't have rights. It could be, if enough people assert that those are rights, that they become, in effect, rights. Expectations of employees, and you can't hire people, you can't retain good people if you don't give them that kind of breadth of ability to speak robustly about things that matter to them.
Paul Hagen with us right now, co-director of the Center for Sports Law and Policy at Duke University, talking about the suspension of ESPN's Jemele Hill for a second violation, the company says, of social media guidelines.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 to talk about the specific instance or the wider issues that have been raised. Was ESPN wrong to suspend Jemele Hill, or is this the right move? Is it acceptable for a figure like her to express her opinions, her political opinions on social media? How much authority, how much sway should employers have over what their employees do, say, post on social media when it comes to political issues? How do things work where you work? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll pick up our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with the factors surrounding the suspension of ESPN anchor Jemele Hill. Paul Hagen is the co-director of the Center for Sports Law and Policy at Duke University.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this debate, this case at ESPN, the back and forth with the White House? What do you think about what Jemele Hill tweeted, about ESPN's response, about the White House response, and more generally, how much sway should employers have over what their employees can say on or off the job, in person or on social media? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
And we'll go to our callers now. We've got Brian with us first in Madison. Brian, hi.
Hi. I think it needs to be said that these individual events that are seemingly unrelated to each other are, in fact, related. They all, at an increasing rate, we're seeing a forward movement towards a singular endpoint, which is fascism. And I think it's time to have a honest conversation about how this could happen, how it is happening, and what needs to be done to stop that and preserve our individual rights.
Brian, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. And Paul, do you see what Brian is suggesting there, a gradual curtailing, drawing back of Americans' rights and civil liberties?
Well, I think one thing that certainly is new and unusual is to have the President of the United States suggest who should be fired. He suggested that football players who didn't stand for the national anthem should be fired, that there should be massive boycotts of entities that don't support certain viewpoints. Could you make an argument that at that point that is essentially the president using his bully pulpit in a way that starts to approach a law? I don't know. I'm not sure I would I'm in a good position to comment directly on the major social trends, but the direct intervention of the president in private employment is certainly new and unusual, and I think, frankly, worrisome.
Ryan, thank you for that call, and we'll go next to Sarah in Stanley. Sarah, hello.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to make the comment that people have the right to state their opinions when they're not at work, as long as it's a statement that is not inciting violence or a hate crime or anything like that. But I think that at work that you need to follow whatever rules or policies that are in place. And that there's a place to speak your mind, and there's one not to, and that would be at the workplace.
Okay, Sarah, thank you for that. And what do you think about what Sarah had to say, Paul?
I think that's an easier kind of case when the person's workplace and work time is clearly delineated. When you are actually at work in a space, for many people, there's a confusion. When they're speaking on behalf of the company, or when they become so associated with an idea that they endanger the company in various kinds of ways. If you, for example, were to be leave work and go out into the streets and protest against funding for public radio, it might be a problem. And, I think it takes a somewhat nuanced and complicated response. There are places where worker speech is protected if they're in labor unions. They can, the employers can't interfere with their right to engage in certain kind of speech designed to further the goals of their employment. So there are other things that we have as tools other than the First Amendment that can be very important.
I'm going to jump in, so maybe we can try to get one more quick call in. Let's take Peter next in Plainfield. Peter, hi.
Hello. A public figure, and she's going to be held responsible for what she says, whether she thinks this was a private venue, her Facebook page or whatever. She's going to be held responsible. She's a public figure because of her job at ESPN. An example, Juan Williams casually mentions how he feels riding in an airplane where there's people that he identified as Arab origin. He's instantly fired from NPR. she's had a second warning and suspended. I think she knows what she's doing, and they're treating her with kid gloves when you compare that to what happened to Juan.
Peter, thank you for that. And Paul, I've got about 30 seconds. What is your response to Peter's thoughts?
The should is always a complicated question, and I don't want to go too far into should. I think that the is here, the First Amendment does not protect a private employer's decisions about employment decisions, and that can extend to the behavior of the employee outside of the workspace unless there is some kind of protected category or other form of legal or constitutional protection.
And we leave it there, Paul. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Paul Hagan, professor of law and co-director of the Center for Sports Law and Policy at Duke University.